A teenage boy had just finished passing his driving exam, his written exam and the actual driving exam, and had received his driver's license. So he decided that he would discuss with his father the use of the family car now that he could drive officially. And his dad thought for a minute, and he said, "Well, I tell you what, son, I'll make you a deal. If you bring your grades up from a C to a B average, if you start studying your Bible, and if you get a haircut, we'll talk about it." So about 6 weeks go by, and the sons agreed to these terms, and the dad came in and said, "Well, son, I see that you've improved your grades. They're now to B average, and I've observed that you've been studying your Bible. But I still notice that you haven't cut your hair yet." He said, "You know, Dad, I've been thinking about that. In my study of the Bible, I've noticed that Moses had long hair, Samson had long hair, and John the Baptist had long hair." And his dad said, "Son, did you also notice they always walked wherever they went?" Remember that, fathers, if you have teenagers. Timing is everything. Reich and I, a number of years ago, went to Jamaica, not for the feast, but just for a short vacation. And on the way home, we flew from Ocho Rios, which is where we were, to Miami. And there we caught a plane from Miami to Dallas-Fort Worth, where we were to change planes again to go on to Seattle. Unfortunately, we were a little delayed getting to Miami, but that wasn't a problem because the plane we were on was about an hour late getting away from Miami. It had several mechanical problems. So naturally, we were a little concerned about whether we would, you know, make our connecting flight. And we'd never been in Dallas-Fort Worth before. But after all of what I'm about to tell you happened, I looked at a diagram of how big that airport is. They have five terminals. And if you think of them in this way, like they're stacked on top of each other, five, with all innumerable gates. And so if you're arriving down here and you're departing gates up here, you've got a long trek, depending upon how much time you have to get there. So in any event, we got to Dallas-Fort Worth, and the airlines were, you know, they were trying to make it a little easier on us. So the captain said that the stewards would and stewardesses would tell us which gates we would need to go to, because they knew by their manifest where their passengers were headed from that point. And so they told us the gate, you know, if you were going to San Francisco, you go to gate such and such, or if you're going to Seattle, gate S2, or whatever it was. So they tried to make it as easy as possible. And they also asked everyone that wasn't looking to connect, but just getting off there, to remain seated while the rest of us got out. Well, we got to the airport, we landed. They opened the doors, and about 30 or 40 people headed for the corridor once we got off the plane, all running at about the same time because everyone was late. And the interesting thing was people were standing on the sides of the corridors, you know, making way for this big herd of people to go through. You know, they didn't have no idea what was going on. They didn't know if it was an emergency of some kind, if there was a fire in the airport or what. But they just wanted to get out of the way. But in any event, we fortunately were fairly close to where we got off the airplane, and so we made our flight. It was like, 10 or 15 minutes. Unfortunately, our luggage arrived a couple days later. In any event, time is very important in our lives, and timing is important in our lives. Most of you today probably have a wristwatch on that you check every so often. We all have the same amount of time. We all have 24 hours every day to do all the things that we have to do during that day. No one is any, doesn't have special privileges and has more time than anyone else. However, it is up to us individually how that time is spent, how we spend those hours. You spend them at the rate of 60 seconds a minute, or 60 minutes an hour, or 24 hours a day. But you can't turn time on and off like you do a machine. It's irretrievable, and once it's spent, it can't be replaced. It's a resource that you should not waste. If your boss gives you a job assignment and gives you a deadline, you know how much time that you have in order to do it. You've got a deadline. So everything we do revolves around time. Any of you that during the 4th of July went up to one of the islands, you had to factor in a 2 or 3 hour wait at whichever ferry you were departing from, and then compare that to how long it would take you if you were to drive around instead. Everything we do has a element of time attached to it. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 3, chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, which talks about a collage of time in our lives. It's illustrated the different things that happen to us using the dimension of time. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. For everything, there's a season and a time for every purpose under the heaven. There's an appropriate time for everything in our lives. Verse 2, there's a time to be born, and that we don't have anything to say about. We have no control over that. My mom told me, she said, you were conceived on Orcas Island, which is where Mom and Dad were teaching school. I was born in Spokane, however. But that was meaningless to me at the time she told me. I don't even think I knew what the word conceive meant. But that was something that none of us have any control over. You're born at a certain time. And also it says there's a time to die. And I'm just putting Hebrews 9:27 in here. You don't have to turn there, but it says it's appointed unto men once to die. So there's no way that you're going to avoid that, unless, of course, you are changed. If you're alive and changed, then you do not have to go through that process. There's a time to plant. And those of you who like to garden and perhaps have small gardens, here in the Pacific Northwest, timing is everything, because if you put seeds in the ground too soon and it's still likely to freeze, or if it's a very, very wet spring, those seeds can rot and never germinate. However, if you put the seeds in the ground too late, then you may not have a long enough growing season for them to fully mature. And if you are growing corn, for example, you might get long stringy ears with a few kernels on, that type of thing. So when you think about these huge farms in the Midwest that have the huge tractors and caterpillars that they plow and they disc, and then when they seed, they have multiple seeders behind them, so they spread out I don't know how long, but they're capable of doing that. So seeding is a very important thing, and timing with regard to the seeding is important. A time to plant, and then there's a time to pluck up that which is planted. It's very important that you harvest whatever it is that you've planted correctly and at the right time. If they're too green, whatever they are, if it's fruit too green, then it tastes bad. And maybe even if it's picked green to go to the market, perhaps that's, I mean, I don't know. When you look at bananas, for example, that are picked green, it's amazing that they arrive in the shape they do, and that they, you know, that's all a precise time associated with that process. There's a time to pluck up that which is planted. Verse 3, there's a time to kill. And since we just talked about planting and harvesting, I think you could also include this in the category of harvesting of animals. There's a time when you kill your chickens. There's a time when you kill your sheep or your cattle or your beef cattle or whatever it is, whatever animal you're using for meat. Or if in the case of hunters who go hunting here, usually in the fall for deer, it's a time to kill. Your license tells you you can hunt this species of animal between such and such a date, because they want to kill off enough to not upset the equilibrium of nature, but on the other hand, they don't want to kill off too many, so they're on the endangered species list. So there's a time to kill. And in the Old Testament, God gave Israel the license, as it were, to go and kill other peoples. That was the Old Testament. Of course, now, you know, in our time, Christ was very explicit about that commandment, thou shalt not kill. And so you don't kill. We don't kill people like they did back then. There's also a time to heal. You know, God has designed our bodies with amazing recuperative abilities, but even then, you break an arm or you break a leg or a hip, and what does the doctor do? He sets the joint or the break, and then he wraps or puts a cast around it. Or in the case of a hip, maybe they use pins to put everything back together. But it takes an element of time for that to completely heal, for those bones to fuse back together. It takes time to heal. And that, of course, God is responsible for our healing. Going on, there's a time to break down. And if you don't change the oil on your car, I'll guarantee you there'll be a time you'll break down somewhere along the highway, or some time when you're rushing to make a deadline or something, a most inoperable time. Of course, you can use that for a variety of ways, but I mean, that just came to mind. And there's a time to build up, and this could apply to building a house, building a home. Time to break it down. It's obsolete. It's no longer usable. So take it down and then build up something new, something better, something more efficient, something that'll house all of our family. Verse 4, it's a time to weep. We all have time in our lives when we feel like weeping because someone in the family has died, someone has very, very ill. Someone has left us. Someone is moving away to another part of the country, and we may not see them for a long time. So we weep because we're sad. But there's also another side to this. There's a time that we weep when we're happy. I don't know how many of you have heard a beautiful song at some point in time. And the example that comes to mind most readily is when the Star Spangled Banner is played at the opening of various games, whatever they may be. And there's a certain, there's an anticipation already. Everyone's excited about the game itself, but there's a great deal of patriotism also at the same time. And sometimes, depending upon how well the person doing the vocals does their job, it can be a very emotional time that will move you to tears. But not only that, you can hear some song on the radio that maybe takes you back to the 50s or 60s or 40s or whatever, or whenever you were a teenager. And maybe that song was special to you and your sweetheart, and brings tears to your eyes remembering about it. So there's a time to weep, and it can be for sadness, or it can be because you're happy, because you're overwhelmed. There's a time to laugh. I'm not talking about off-color jokes or smutty jokes, or sometimes on the TV, people will stand up there and, I don't know how they can even call themselves comedians. But every other word is profanity, or every other word is off color, obscene, this type of thing. I was thinking by contrast how just the past 4th of July, when my son and his family always come up here, it's kind of a family reunion get together. And since Juliet, their oldest daughter, just became a teenager on July 7th, they always have a party for her, and we always have it. Lunch, a special lunch at the Cabbage Patch restaurant in Snohomish. And I think the reason why that has such meaning to Greg and Jennifer, my son and his wife, is that I believe they had just gotten engaged, and we took them to lunch there. And so they always think back to that time in their lives, and that's why it's always one of these family rituals. We're going to have lunch at the Cabbage Patch on Sunday to celebrate Juliet's birthday. She just turned 13, and we were talking about that, and I said, I knew that Juliet was going to really do something in her life. I mean, she's still only a teenager, but she's very bright, and she's does a lot of things. She does karate. She's a long-distance runner. So she has done a lot in her short lifespan. But I said, the reason I knew is because one time, and I had to ask her mother after I told what I was about to say, because I couldn't remember how old she was, but I thought she was like 2 or 3 or something. But she walked in to her mom and said, "Mother, my diaper's askew." Of course, everyone laughed. I don't even use the word askew in my vocabulary. Here's this 2, and Jennifer couldn't remember for sure, but she thought she was around 2 or 2.5. And here's this very, very small girl using that word. And she said, that was Greg. Greg was teaching her all these big words to improve her vocabulary, or to not to improve it, but to start it, to build it at a young age. But anyway, that was very funny. It was very humorous. There wasn't anything bad or wrong with something like that. And there's a lot in this world that we can laugh at that doesn't have to be obscene or off color or something that you wouldn't want to tell someone else in this room. There's a time to laugh. Be selective as to what you laugh at. Also, there's a time to mourn. And that, again, goes back to when someone weeps. Weeping and mourning are very closely associated. And it may be for the same reasons, a death, a loss of some kind. Because time does soothe the wounds on our hearts, which may at one point seem absolutely unbearable, time has a way of ameliorating, of making that better. And so there is a time that that happens. And also there's a time to dance. David danced, and of course his wife chewed him out for it because she said, you know, he was doing it in an obscene way. That's why he was doing it. And that was just entirely wrong. He was dancing because he was happy. He was dancing to the Lord because of the victory. There's a time to dance. Most of the feast sites you go to have a family dance or a teenage dance or something like that. It's a time of joy and enjoyment. So there's a time to dance. Verse 5, there's a time to cast away stones. And Strong's, the name or the word stones is H68, spelled E-B-E-N, pronounced A-then. And it's a root word which means to build a building, or a secondary use could be to build a family. So it's talking about building blocks here. There's a time to cast building blocks away. And that time may be when you've counted the cost, like in Luke 14:28, and decided, one, you don't have enough money to build at this time, and you don't want to go into debt at this time. So there's a time to cast away. There's a time to cast the stones away. Or a building may become obsolete or a hazard of some, you know, in some way, so it has to be taken down. I learned a new word when we were in Los Angeles. We go down there to visit my son every so often, and I learned the word scraper, which those of you in the construction business, that may be a familiar term, but Greg and Jennifer, hoping at some point we might move down there. Of course, that's the last place in the world I want to move, but I humored them, and we'd go around and look at homes in their neighborhood, which they thought we might be interested in because of the price and other things. But there are a lot of older homes. They live in Brentwood, which is between Santa Monica and Beverly Hills, an older section, a number of older homes, very nice area. And they basically bought a home there because they wanted their children near the schools. There are a number of private schools, very good schools in that area. So that was the reason why they selected that area to live in. But in any event, Greg said that some of these older homes, they're scrapers, which means contractors buy them not intending to do anything with them except bring a bulldozer in and scrape them over and haul them away so they can build a big, you know, a new home. Well, Greg and Jennifer bought a home right next to a bag lady who had piles of junk and trash and garbage all over her front lawn and her porch and her backyard as well. And one time the city came and hauled most of that away, but she gradually replenished it. But I think they were pretty smart. They got an older home, but they got it for a very good price, and it was because they had to live next to this eye store, but they knew that at some point, because of her age, she wasn't going to be around forever. A few years later, she died. They came in, scraped that home completely to the ground, and now there's a beautiful two-story home adjacent, which they bought the property because it was very low in value due to that. Now the property's gone up because they've got that nice home adjacent to it. Of course, their taxes go up accordingly. But in any event, there's a time to tear down. There's a time to throw away stones, a time to gather stones together, or it's time to build. Going on, and we're still in verse 5, there's a time to embrace. And that's a way that we show our love and affection to our friends, our families, sometimes because we're happy to see them, or sometimes because they need to be comforted. Sometimes they've had a loss, and they need someone to just put their arms around them and say, you know, it's okay, you're going to be all right. They've been affected very deeply. I think one thing in a conjunction with that, we, and I'm addressing this to men in the church, have to be very careful or very cautious when we hug a woman in the congregation, because you don't know their backgrounds, especially if they're new. Their women have been groped, they've been molested, some few have been raped, and you don't know what kind of emotions a hug, if it's unwarranted, will trigger with them. So a good approach to be would be just let, if they want a hug, let them hug you, and then you will know they've satisfied themselves that, you know, you're okay. There's a time to refrain from embracing. If you're sick, if you're contagious, if you have a bad cold, if you have the measles, if you have whooping cough, well, if you have those things, you obviously shouldn't be in the congregation. But in any arena of life where you have something like that, you shouldn't be embracing, because you don't want to give what you have to someone else. If you're married, and this goes back to hugging in the congregation, and you have an attraction from someone of the opposite sex that doesn't happen to be your spouse, that is definitely a time to refrain from embracing. You're just playing with fire. You're kidding yourselves. Verse 6, there's a time to get, time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through some of the verses, but these are just by way of illustration what Solomon is showing us, that everything in our lives has an appropriate time or season. There's time for everything. Some things occur only once, like birth or death, but others are ongoing. You go down to the store to buy groceries every week. That's a repetitive thing. However, maybe you are facing a career change, or maybe your car has been totaled, or you've had some other thing like that. We learn to experience from these priority items that we need to be able to have the reserves in our lives to address them when they come up in case of an emergency. We're not like the man who asked his doctor, he was having problems, he went in for a diagnosis, and the doctor, after examining him, said, you know, I know what's wrong with you. You're burning the candle at both ends. And he said, I know that already. I just came in for more wax. We can't be like that. We don't need more wax. We need to take care of what we have. Verse 9, what profit hath he that worketh that wherein he laboreth? In other words, what benefit can a worker gain from his toil? We as Christians, we take our work seriously. We need to, and we place a high value on family and church, but we need to also make sure that everything is in balance, that we're not overdoing one thing or the other. Verse 10, I've seen the travail which God has given to the sons of men to be exercised, to keep them occupied. You know, work is a major source of our identity. We're told to work harder. Mr. Roderick Meredith, in our freshman Bible class years ago in Ambassador, said, that he would rather burn out than rust out. And then he went on to explain what that meant. He would rather be out there in the world working and doing something and moving rather than sitting on the sidelines watching the world go by. But there's a balance to that too. We like the bus driver who told his passengers, well, I have good news and bad news. The bad news is we took a wrong turn a while back and we're on the wrong road. The good news is we're making great time. And that sometimes can be what our lives are like. We're making great time, but where are we going? We don't know where we're going. It's like the going and moving is its own reward, regardless of where we end up. Well, people who lack a knowledge of God and his plan don't have a clue why they are here on earth or the purpose for their lives. They know they have to work to eat unless they decide to steal. And of course, there's a number of them doing it, both overtly and black and white-collar crime, the unseen crime that the IRS says they lose millions, maybe it's billions of dollars a year because of fraud associated with that. And of course, like Mr. Holliday was mentioning a little earlier about the things going on with the nations. The nations are doing the same thing. They're trying to steal land for whatever reason, whatever purpose. They're trying to take something that I guess the question is it a legitimate reason or is it an illegitimate reason? We don't know, but all you have to do is look at the Ukraine, Korea, Japan, China, excluding the Middle East. They're is someone or some nation looking over at an island or they're looking over at more land. I mean, it just kind of reminds you of the Second World War when Hitler annexed Austria and then from there on we know what happened. Well, where will you be a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, or 10 years from now? You know, one of these days, God is going to pull the plug. We don't know when it's going to happen. Not even Jesus knows. But it will happen. As we have seen, there is a time for everything. We don't need to burn out. We don't need to rust out. But we do, within the configuration of our lives, we do need to reach a balance in what we do. Someday, our King is going to ask the question if we have used our time and talents wisely. I hope our answer will be a resounding yes.